Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, everybody, here we are. And yeah. This is the most exciting time of the year for me as dove season is approaching. And it's, when this airs, it'll just be a few days away.
The anticipation is there for sure.
It's my favorite, opening day of all.
Yeah, every morning I'm riding and I'm looking at the corn going, when are they going to cut it? Are the doves going to be here? Are they not going to be here? You know, so you're just worried about it the whole time. But, yeah, I mean, you know, right now, it ain't looking too bad.
Looking pretty good.
Yeah, I just love this thing. So here we are. We're sitting here just a few days away. And let me just kind of look around the room. We've got a super guest, Tony Rossetti.
He is the best wing shooter I know.
He's an Olympic champion.
He's the best one I know.
He's incredible. Now,
and not only can he shoot, he can play pool and throw darts and anything having to do with that. I can attest to that.
That's pretty impressive, Tony.
When I was younger, yes. I'm a little older now, and my eyesight is not as good as it used to be when I was younger. Yeah. But you're right about one thing. The anticipation of dove season. My two favorite seasons in the world are turkey and dove. One,
amen.
Dove, you get to shoot a lot. I mean, it's not like you're sitting on a tree in a tree stand for 6 hours waiting for something to come by. You're out there blasting away and having fun, especially if it's a good hunt. Get your limit, have a party, have somebody cooking dove breast for you right there at the end of the hunt.
Man. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait.
It's good.
A little brown water and a cigar.
It is good.
All right. So just hang on, Tony. We are all excited. We got a few little things we got to do. So we got Mac, who's going to be fact checking everybody really hard. Then we've got Clay Roger Davis sitting in here.
Not even close, but okay.
That was the right names in the wrong order. Davis,
Who is here, who is known to shoot an occasional dove.
Is an accomplished shooter, too. Mm-hmm.
And so here he is. He's going to kind of help us out. So what?
You don't want to sit beside these guys in the dove field.
I don't want to sit beside him anywhere.
Yo, that's true.
If I can avoid that. So, Mac, this episode... We're ready to get started. Let's get on down the rabbit hole. Who is bringing us this episode?
So one guest you forgot to mention is the Cooper Blind that's sitting out there behind me.
I didn't even see it.
Yeah. So Dudley and I were at the Mississippi Wildlife Extravaganza and got to meet Dan Cooper. And he had a bunch of these. It's called the Gamekeeper Dove Blind.
In Chattanooga.
It is really nice. Got little windows for a dog to look out. It's
got the little straps you put your brush in.
So, look, Mac, it'd be a great way to take Wilkes, and he can hide. He can stay in the shade, hide from birds.
Keep your dog cool.
They're really nice. So, guys, you can go to cooperhunting.com, and then this is called the Gamekeeper Dove Blind. Field Blind, I think is what it is. But they're really – it's like a giant umbrella.
Yeah, it's like one of those beach umbrella things that kind of lays down. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm real impressed. So yeah, guys, y'all check that out. What else we got, Mac?
Our friends at Gamekeeper Fieldwear.
Great clothes. And at this time of year, look, I'm looking at Tony's got on one of the shirts right now. It's
shooter shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, some great stuff. So go to gamekeeperfieldwear.com. Check them out. Anybody else?
The brand new Flying Dove right shirt.
Oh, yeah. Rob's been working on that.
Yeah.
And Clay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like it.
Rob, where can I get that?
You can get the Flying Dove shirt on the Mossy Oak website. Go to the Companions page and go check it out. We've already sold through a good chunk of the inventory, so we're trying to get a few more in already.
Yeah, they just launched like yesterday or the day before, didn't they?
Yeah.
Can you do a notify me or anything?
Yeah, I think you can. You can go on there, and if it's out of stock, you can click the notify me option.
That's a cool looking.
And then you'll receive an email when they're back in stock.
Sweet.
Kind of a vintage looking shirt.
Yeah.
I like the way that thing looks.
It's classic.
All right, good. So, Mac, has that got our business out of the way, you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, guys, what we want to try to do today with anticipation of dove season is learn how we can be better shots. Lanny, I've seen you on a dove shoot. Oh, my gosh.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it? Wait, hold up there, buddy.
So I want to look at Tony. And Clay, feel free, from time to time we'll turn your mic on if you raise your hand.
That'll work.
Tony, what can a guy when you go to a dove shoot, you've been doing this a long time. I don't even think they had limits when you started. But do you look around and see guys just making rookie mistakes and things? What are some of the things you see them do?
Absolutely. One of the most prevalent ones are people that are not familiar with dove hunting. They're out there and they want to have a good time. I've had people show up in white T-shirts and orange hats, and the orange hat's not a bad idea for safety reasons with some of the people I've been on fields with. But, you know, I've been in dove field since I was 4 years old. I was the best bird dog my dad ever had. I took hand signals great, you know, anything. But just you can dress appropriately for what you're out there to do. I've always worn camouflage as long as camouflage been in business. Mostly bottomland. I told Toxie a long time ago when he was just in, I said, you hit it great on the first try. I think bottomland's best all-around camouflage ever made, but that's my opinion.
Can we hit the horns?
Yeah, where is that? I agree there.
That is my opinion, and, take it for what it's worth. But anyway, there's still a lot of good, but, appropriate clothing. A lot of people wear shorts because it is a hot day out there.
It can be very hot.
I've been on days when it was not, and it was wonderful. Short sleeve shirt. I wear a T-shirt, Mossy Oak T-shirt, long sleeve. I'm trying to stay as hidden as I can because in a lot of dove fields, you're out more in the open than you would be if you were turkey hunting or deer hunting or whatever. So if you have the opportunity to be hidden, a lot of people put out hay bales to get next to, and that certainly helps a lot, but appropriately dress, for hunting. That's what you're out there to do. Some concealment is better than a white T-shirt, I can assure you. Because I've had the guy get out in front of me about 50 yards with a white T-shirt. That was every dove I shot at was flaring so hard to the right and left, I didn't hit any. But, think about what you're out there to do. You're out there to hunt, So prepare for it like that.
Sure. Clay, what mistakes do you see people make?
Like what Tony said, not dressing properly, but the other two pet peeves of mine is somebody will bring their shells in a white Walmart bag or something, or they'll have 900 brass laying out there just sparkling, getting all the attention in the world. The other thing is you might have a whole bunch of birds coming in and they just rush the shot. They won't be patient. They're sky blasting them, shooting them 100 yards away. Just be patient. They're coming, or another one's right behind it. You know what I mean? So you got doves coming to the field and you got your people lined up or whatever the case may be. And one person shoots way early and messes it up for everybody. Just be patient.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, I've been on hunts where I've watched people shoot at birds so far away. I mean, I'm talking 100 yards. And I said, not only would that have to be a diamond shot wrapped in gold, surrounded by platinum to have made that shot and hit that bird. For one thing, your shell's already dropping at that range. I've seen so many people that shoot at a bird going out of the field when if they hit it, they would never find it.
Yeah, that's good.
And all they're doing is take your time, just Let them come in, pick your shots, and let them come into the field. Don't just, you know, think about your other hunters too. If it's a shot, you're not going to, it's a difficult shot. Let the bird go to somebody else. Don't shoot them and scare them out of the field before they ever get into the field too. You know, there's little things that can enhance the dove hunt.
So when you show up to go and there's a bunch of people standing around trucks and then everybody starts filtering out in the field, what's a distance that apart that seems to be the best?
Probably 60 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of fields, you 50, but 60 yards. And I've been in fields where people have dropped doves at my feet. I've only known two really good long-range shooters in my life. One was a guy named Dick Forrest, who was a trap shooter I hunted with up in Maryland when I lived up there. And the other is Jim Porter, shooting an old side-by-side fox. I have no idea how far he's having to lead that bird, but he's that can kill a dove further than anybody I've ever seen, you know, and hit them hard.
So you're saying 60 yards apart.
Apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's and then again, the biggest problem is people shoot at doves way too far from them. You know, the average dove shot is probably somewhere between 20 and 25, maybe 30 yards. That'd be, you know, that's the average dove shot. People shooting at 50 and 60 yards, and sometimes it's hard to tell how far you are. I look at a bird and watch him fly by and watch him fly over some bushes or whatever, and I can look down ground level and correlate that to, God, that's a long way. I shouldn't even have shot at that bird.
Yeah.
Good gosh, the lead you have to have on a bird flying with, we'll get into that later, but with the wind at 50 yards, you don't realize how far you have to be in front of that bird. That's a hard thing for me to do. I've shot a little bit of skeet in my life, and all my longest lead was maybe 3 feet. It's hard for me to throw that gun out further than that. I'm a really good close-range shooter. I'm not a real good long-range shooter. It's just hard for me to get way out there. That's just me admitting that I'm not a great shot.
Yeah.
And pick your shots. I mean, that's what it's all about, for sure.
Yep.
You got a question, Lanny?
You know, I guess one of the things I learned early on, and I don't know if this is true or not, is as far as swinging on birds, you know, as you're squared up on a bird and you're starting to move your gun. what's the best approach to that? Is it, you know, I assume it's to swing and not to point and shoot, but describe, you know, what the, I guess your physiological process you go through once you see a bird, you pick your shot and you decide what to do. What happens next?
Basically, there's two types of shooting, of aiming. There's the swing through method, which is you come from behind the bird, you're swinging past him. Basically, on that swing, if you're swinging faster than the bird's flying, as soon as you see daylight between, now you're looking at the bird. You really never look at your barrel. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the target. So what you're doing is you swing by him. And when you see daylight between the bird and your gun, you pull the trigger. The secret to that is not stopping the gun at that point. You have to keep, you just, you pull the trigger as it goes by, and it extends the lead. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other is sustained lead. Bird's coming at you. You're holding your gun out in front of the bird all the time. You've got a lead. You see, you know how much you're going to lead. You're pulling out in front and you hold it there and you hold it there until it's time to shoot. The downfall there is a lot of people I've seen, and me included, you see a bird coming from a pretty good ways away, and you get that gun up and you hold it there, and you got it. And he's 100 yards now, but I've got the gun to my cheek and I'm holding it there and looking. About the time I get ready to shoot, the gun slows down. You don't hold that lead. You shoot behind him.
Kind of tire out before he gets there.
You know,
muscle fatigue.
I have found out that when the bird gets with 50 yards of me, that's when I'm bringing my gun up. And the problem is people wait for the bird to get right over them. His speed increases exponentially at that point. It's like, whew, he's by me. When he's 40 yards out there, he's in range. And then when you pick him up at your feet and not back in the weeds somewhere. So people tend to wait too long to shoot. And then you always have to maintain the gun speed when you're shooting. You have to, you cannot slow it down. You can't stop. Because what happens when you slow down or stop, the bird doesn't. Mm-hmm. The best advice my dad ever gave me, he said, son, you got to shoot where they're going and not where they've been.
Makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I just always, that scenario he just described, you see a dove across the field and you go, okay, I got him. Mm-hmm. And you lock in.
Is he coming?
That's the one I'm going to miss. But then if somebody says, hey, Bobby, turn, and you turn around.
Instinctively.
That's right.
Yeah.
Instinctive shooter.
Yeah.
But what Tony was talking about, so what I do when I'm sitting in my spot, I'm looking at the ground. First thing I'm doing is look at the ground. Okay, this is 50 yards. This is 50 yards. This is 50 yards. And then I'll watch my birds. When I know they get within there, I know they're within range. I don't hold my gun up and anticipate it so long because, first of all, I'm getting anticipation. I'm getting nervous, you know, and I get tired out. And then you talk about lead. If one's coming across and he's wide open, it's so hard to make yourself hold a big lead. Sometimes you might hold a lead of 25 or 30 feet. Like, it's crazy.
Now, wait a minute now.
If he's out there at 45, 50 yards with the wind,
yep, he's moving.
He's coming. He's getting it.
I don't think I've ever led anything 25 feet.
You don't realize you're doing it. It's not.
When you're looking at a barrel width and that bird, you're just seeing a little bit. And when he's on out there, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Talk about that, about, you know, mounting your gun and what your sight plane should look like. I know you said you keep your eyes on the bird, but it also comes with a fundamental. I have to have this thing shouldered right too, right?
Most people, and I've taught a lot of people, and young people and ladies and kids and everybody else and everybody in between. Most people try to bring the gun to their shoulder. You don't bring the gun to your shoulder. I'm going to slide over here just a second and explain what I'm talking about. You don't bring the gun to your shoulder. You bring the gun to your face. Mm-hmm. Your shoulder just follows. By doing that, I'm not going to move my head at all. What happens when you bring the gun to your shoulder is you bring it up here, and then you drop your head. What you want to try to do is you want to try to keep your eyes as level as possible. As soon as you cock your head, you lose depth perception for that instantaneous second you want to pull the trigger. And you just, it's a different look. So if I bring this gun up and I bring it to my face, my head doesn't ever move. And when it hits there, I'm looking right down the center of the barrel. Now, the other thing about that, if you can see any of this rib when you're mounting the gun, you have to account for that by probably floating the bird on top of your bead. I've never done that. I've always, you know, these people that say guns shoot high, shoot low, or whatever. I've never known a manufacturer to build in height variations on you. I hear people say that Benelli's shoot high, and that basically accounting for this. If I can see 3 inches of this rib, imagine, okay, if I point at that light right there, okay? Now, I'm pointing right here, right at it, and I'm putting the front bead on it. I can see all of my rib. If you were to look down that barrel, I'd be shooting about 5 or 6 inches, and we're only maybe 5 yards from the – I'd be shooting 5 or 6 inches above the target already. It takes practice. You don't – a lot of people bring the gun up, and they bring it way out on their shoulder. This pad's in here for a reason. If you bring it up, like I say, and bring it up in here. Like I said, your head never moves. Boom, right there. But people bring it in out here, and after a good dove hunt or a good duck hunt, they're black and blue from here to here, from their elbow all the way up to their shoulder. The gun doesn't go out on your arm, and people want to bring it up. They do that. They throw it out there and drop that head down. What you want to do is bring it up. If you bring your elbow up, just leave the gun off of it. Just bring your arm up. Forms a pocket right in the meat part of your shoulder here. Not out on the ball of your of your shoulder, but right in the center. It's a perfect spot for that gun to fit. And like I said, you don't have to move your head. Your head stays right there. Now you're looking right down the barrel.
That's a pretty thing to watch.
Get it in the pocket.
So guys, I think, Rob, we are putting this on YouTube, aren't we? So a guy can go and watch this on YouTube and see Tony with the way he's handling that gun. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Here's where the gun fits. Right in here, not out here.
So that's why gun barrels have a rib on, isn't it, Clay?
Yes.
Yeah, it helps.
It helps. And to touch on what Tony said, you know, some people say, well, this gun shoots higher, this gun shoots low. Well, first of all, a gun's got to fit you. If a gun don't fit you, it ain't going to shoot right no way. And that's like, what you said a while ago is exactly what Matt was doing. And we really just sat down about this 2 weeks ago and I showed him what all he was doing wrong. He was talking about his cheek hitting him. He would mount the gun and he was pushing his head on the thing. He wondered why he couldn't hit good. Yeah.
So it's like you're matching your plane of sight to the plane of that gun barrel.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't hardly ever even notice my gun barrel because, like I said, I'm looking at that thing. I'm looking at whatever my target is. And when I throw my gun up there, I'm still never off my target. My barrel just happens to be in the right place.
Right.
So, Tony, you're a gun sales guy. You've been selling guns a long, big part of your life. But
almost 50 years.
If a guy comes into Gary's to buy a shotgun, you're going to walk him through and make sure that gun fits him. And now,
absolutely.
That's kind of a responsibility of a gun store to make sure they –
Well, and you know, a lot, and with a lot of these dads and moms, both of them buying guns for their kids, if they're starting out at 7, 8, 9 years old, I've tried to teach young people to shoot a shotgun before when their dad bought them a really nice over and under Browning, and they're like this. They've got their arms fully extended with it on their shoulder, and it just barely can get to the trigger. You cannot teach somebody how to shoot like that. I mean, I was so fortunate when my dad took me for the gun club for the first time. I have trouble remembering names. I'll never forget this name, probably because of what he did. Ziggy Puebo, who was a gun jobber, you know, just whatever. He had a Remington 58, model 58, 20 gauge that he had cut off for his daughter. Now, I was 11, 12, I don't even know when. So I say 12 years old. Okay, when I got my driver's license at 15, I was 5'5", 112 pounds. So knocked 3 more years off of that. And I was a pretty slight person back in those days.
You were dancing around in the shower to
Ooh,
get wet.
You ain't wrong about that. But he had this gun, I wish I'd have kept it, but the stock was, I don't even know if it was 12 inches long. Standard stock's about 14 and a quarter, depending. If the average, you'd say 14. Youth stock, or what they call a compact stock. They don't use the word youth much anymore, but compact's 13. And then companies make a 12-inch stock. This was probably 12. And I picked it up, and it just, you know, did like that. It fit me just like it was made for me. Eventually, my dad bought that gun for me, and that was the first skeet gun I ever owned. But, you know, fit and feel is everything with any kind of gun, pistol, whatever. My hand, I got these little bitty short paws, my little fingers, and, you know, they're not very long. Some pistols, the grips are too big. They just don't fit me. So I buy something that fits me and I'm comfortable with. Do the same thing with shotguns. And I've helped in the store a lot with kids trying to get them to show them the proper technique, you know.
Sure.
But it takes practice. It takes practice to do that.
Mac, you got a question?
I do. So I know everybody has their own opinion on shot size and constriction of chokes. What do you think is the most successful shot size and choke constriction?
You know, probably all round, the best, probably 8. You know, people think, I shot 9s all my life when I was growing up because that's what I loaded to shoot skeet with. I shot light 9s, killed a bunch of doves with 9s. It does not take much to kill a dove. Now, what the difference here is you take the difference between a 7.5 and a 9, I'm increasing the density of that pattern in a 12-gauge shell by probably somewhere around 80 or more pellets, maybe even more than that, between a 7.5 and a 9. If I can dense that pattern up even more, let me give you, pattern is, everything is predicated on a 30-inch circle, okay? Improved cylinder. 75% of the pattern in a 30-inch circle at 25 yards, okay? Modified. 70% of the pattern in a 30-inch circle at 35 yards. Full. 75% of the pattern in a 30-inch circle at 45 yards. Everything is, so when you say my gun is modified, whether it's a 410, 28, 20, 12, 16, whatever, obviously with a 410, I've got fewer shot in the shell, but it's still the same scenario. It's still 75% of the pattern in a 30-inch circle at whatever that choke is.
And that's 25, 35, and 45?
Usually, yeah. That's, I mean,
roughly.
Chokes today are so, I mean, this new light modified choke, I always shot Mesquite chokes, and I still believe improved cylinder may be the best all-around dove choke. Mm-hmm. People think they've got to have a full choke. And I, when I was working at another, at a sporting goods store, and kids from college would come in there, they want to buy, have a full choke gun, shooting 3 3/4 drams of powder and 1 1/4 of sixes. For the one or two birds you kill or wound out there at 50 yards, and now you got to go out there and find him and see if you can find him. And looking for a bird at 50 yards is not easy. You're going to miss a lot of birds. Cause like, again, go back to that first thing I said. Most dove are killed within 30 yards of you, usually around 25 yards. If you don't believe that, every time, think about the next time you go dove hunting and you walk out to pick one up that you lose sight of. Most of the time, you'll walk past the bird, you'll find him coming back. He was closer to you than you really thought.
That's fine.
So it's the you know, improved cylinder. I love, you know, modified's okay, but you got to understand, bring that pattern in. When you say at 20, you got a bird at 20 yards and you're shooting a full choke pattern, you got about an 8 or 9 inch pattern out there. You better be a good shot. I'm not that good, you know.
Wow. What you got, Clay?
I agree with Tony 100%. I'm guilty of shooting a full and a 16 gauge just because what I grew up with, but my preference is an improved cylinder. And here's another thing. Some people get the mindset, okay, well, I'm shooting a full barrel. I can shoot this thing 60, 70 yards out there. So they're taking shots that really don't need to be taken.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. That kind of, Dudley, you wanted to talk about ethics a little bit, didn't you?
Well, we've already kind of hit on the ethics thing, other than my pet peeve is the guy that backs his truck up into the field and sits in the tailgate. Talk about flaring birds.
With a white cooler.
Absolutely.
But one of my problems is it just seems like I can be really hit or miss, and I can get in a big slump. So I'll be out there, and I'll get my 8 birds really quick. And my confidence comes up, and then all of a sudden, I can't seem to hit anything. Do you have any suggestions on how to get out of a slump?
Go to Argentina and shoot about 1,000 birds a day, and listen, you'll get real good. I've never done that. It's on my bucket list to do.
It's on mine, too. It's a good point for us to point out. If there's ever a lodge in Argentina that wanted us to come down, and I mean, we could even, no telling what we could do.
You need a good expert to go with you, don't you?
Yeah, we need about 10 people to go. And if there's anybody listening that would like to go, just email us, and we'll put you on the list. And if we can find, maybe we could do an Argentina gamekeeper hunt, and we all go and take some guests.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be fun?
He is fired up about
that. That's what I want to do.
Dudley, I don't know about getting out of that slump. I would say slow down, start picking shots more than just throwing up and shooting quick. Pick your shots a little bit better. and feel the groove again. I mean, it's all of this stuff that we're giving you, Clay, and all of us talking about. It's not something you're going to do naturally. If you've never brought the gun to your face, you've always brought it to your shoulder, it's not going to feel comfortable at first. But practice it. When I first was learning how to shoot international skeet, I was in an army barracks, and I literally, you're bringing the gun up from your hip when the target emerges from the house. And so you have to, the mounting is a big part of how to accomplish, you know, you get better. I used to sit in the barracks at night for hours on end, mounting the gun, running across the roof and wall line, giving me a straight line just to bring it up as I'm moving and practice mount, getting that mount correct. Mounting the gun is probably the most important aspect of shooting accurately and killing a bunch of birds. It's harder for me duck hunting because of all the clothing you've got, and plus my gun's a little long for me for ducks. I need to get the stock adjusted for clothing and everything else. But you tend to, especially ducks when they're whizzing by or something, you throw it up, and when you shoot, you look down and your head isn't anywhere near the stock. You know, get the gun on the stock, make sure you're looking flat down the rib, and like I said, keep your eyes as level as possible. The best advice I can give you on that.
I've done that so many times when like a mallard would be dropping in and you just, where did I, where
how did I miss that?
I know what I was doing. I just looking at the bird and shooting all up under it.
That's so frustrating.
Yes.
Frustrating to the
doves the same way.
And you know what
you get that one that's just doing this, you know, just those wings, you can see his wings beating. He just, and he's looking at you, oh, hey, what that guy down there doing? Nothing. And did he shoot at me? And it, boom, It's so easy to do, but it does take practice.
So looking around the room, what's everybody shoot birds with now? Is it mostly a 20 gauge?
I like my 16 or 28.
Yeah, of course you.
I tell you, the older you get, you know, kids today, as soon as they can, they're going to go to a 12 gauge. They're going to get to the biggest thing they can get.
I'm still there.
When they get our age, then they go, well, my shoulder doesn't feel that good anymore. Say go to the 20. I'm not even going to say what I shoot.
Lanny, you're still shooting 12, aren't you?
Yeah.
I got a buddy who wants to rent me a 28 gauge.
Hardest hitting shell there is.
I've been shooting a 410 the last few years, and I enjoy it until after about the third shoot, that birds get a little wiser, and it's
a little more difficult.
It's a little more difficult. But right that first afternoon.
I'm going to tell you what, and I was fortunate when my dad bought me a 14. He bought me a Model 42 at the pawn shop around the corner from my dad's drugstore. Paid $50 for it. I don't know that there was ever a shell fired through it. You couldn't think about buying that. You couldn't buy the wind off of it for $50 today.
Yeah.
But when I first took it out to the skeet range and started shooting, I didn't have anybody come up to me and go, oh, man, you're shooting a 410. That thing, that's so hard to hit. You know, it's harder to hit with a 410. They didn't tell me that. What they said was, if you point that gun in the same place you point your 12 gauge, you'll kill a bird. It's just you got to get in your mind that you're not shooting a 410. You're just shooting a shotgun.
Yeah.
If you swing it and point it in the same place you point your 12, your 20, your 28, you're going to kill a bird. Now, talking about 28, Clay with that 20. I don't know what it is about a 28 gauge. I don't know if it just meets the parameters of a perfect shell, but it is one of the hardest hitting shells made. I mean, it's a shame they cost so much, but that's a thing of production. Fewer shells you make, the more they cost. But 28 gauge is a great quail. If you ask somebody back in the old days up north, and a grouse hunter, if you said, yeah, I got a grouse gun. He didn't have to say anything else. Yeah. What he had was a 28 gauge Parker side by side.
So, Mike, I think the guys at Apex say that that's their like best turkey shell as well, that 28 gauge. Yeah.
Well, isn't.
And I didn't even know that.
I think they, I mean, I know they say that.
Well, isn't, like, I might be wrong, but isn't a 28 gauge the most ballistically correct shotgun there is?
That's what I don't know that for a fact, But that's what I'm saying. That shell, the makeup of it is so whatever it is, it fits and makes the does everything it's supposed to do better than most of them. Yeah.
So, Tony, do you prefer a morning hunt or an afternoon hunt?
This is my opinion and my opinion only, okay? I think morning hunting was the worst thing that ever happened to dove hunting. I know it's a lot of fun. Get up, it's still cool and everything else. I don't think the birds, in this day and time, if you got birds, you're not giving them time to rest. Birds, I mean, if you shoot a bird more than two times in a field within a couple of days, you're going to have trouble finding them again. But it's just, I like afternoon hunting. It was always a social event more than it was anything almost. You got family, friends, and everybody had a good time, had a cookout, bring something to eat and everything. But I just, unfortunately, a lot of people use that to go hunting in the morning, kill a limit. They go hunting in the afternoon, kill another limit. They just, and the birds just don't get time to rest. They get more skittish. They get everything. So, again, my opinion, I'm not a morning hunter. I like it. I mean, it's enjoyable because it's cooler usually than that afternoon when it's 110.
So do you sit down the whole time or do you stand up when the action starts?
I actually shoot better standing than I do sitting. I have a really good dove stool that they don't make it. They made them for a short time, and the legs on it, because I'm kind of short anyway, I can get it up to where I'm just barely sitting. I'm sitting down. It's got a back on it. It swivels 360 degrees. Yeah, circles 360, right?
Yeah.
There we go. Anyway, but I mean, if I want to stand, I'm almost standing on that. I shoot better in a more inclined position than I do sitting, like on a tub, swivel tub, dove bucket, we call them, right?
Yeah. Clay, what do you like?
I prefer standing just because I can swing better. It's just more natural for me because I usually shoot, like he says, I don't, what they call feet tabs. I always hold, I'm usually holding the gun right here and then I throw it up to my shoulder. It's just real hard for me sitting down.
Lanny, I don't think I've ever seen him sit down on the dove.
I don't sit down, period. Yeah. So why would I own the dove?
Yeah. You don't even have a stool, I don't think. Mm-mm. If you're on a dove shoot with Lanny, there's no telling where he's going to pop up.
Up where the birds are.
If you have a Lanny, go by this bag. He's going to be on the other side of the field.
In other words, if he see everybody's getting to shooting down there, he's heading down there, right? One of those.
But you're always standing next to a dead tree, so that's exactly where I'm always going to end up.
Oh, do you do that too?
No, it's a good place to set up.
Yeah, always a good, and the shots are usually a lot easier too sometimes. Yeah.
Have you ever shot a dove out of a tree?
Is a 4-pound robin fast?
While we're here, as a public service announcement, I think we have all, at some point in our life, probably shot a dove off a power line.
Ooh.
They're saying don't do that anymore.
Yeah, you're going to cut the fiber at the house.
Yeah, these internet cables can't take it.
Anybody riding through the Clay County Prairie, please do not shoot birds off of power lines. My kids will be completely put out for at least a couple
of months. Mac, have you ever shot one off a power line? Now, be honest.
I did have one question for Mr. Tony. What do you think about the mojo doves? Do you think they make a difference? Do you think they're necessary?
You know what? I've been in fields when they just swarm to it. And I've been in fields where they flare from it. It's just like a deer call or anything else. Sometimes they work great. Sometimes they don't. The trees and stuff that, the dove tree that you put out there where it's further off the ground and you got maybe a couple of little clip-on things next to it and everything. If they can see that better, those work pretty good. They at least the birds tend to come by and look, if they can come by and look, that's close enough for me. I'm going to make one more statement about shooting.
Yeah.
The worst mistake I see people make in shooting is they try to make the shot perfect. Okay. They try to, if I say shoot a 3-foot lead, they try to make that 3-foot lead perfect. And what happens is the gun will get out in front and they'll say, oh, I'm too far. So they slow down. Then the bird gets by them and then they come back. Then they go and the gun just goes back and forth. The best advice I can give you is do not hesitate. The first time you see the proper, what you think is the proper lead, pull the trigger. Jerk the trigger off. Just get the gun to go. You know, boom. But if you try to, it's trying to make that shot perfect. Listen, perfect shots you do with a rifle. This is a shotgun. You point a shotgun. You aim a rifle. Two different things. So you use your 30-inch circle of pattern out there to kill the bird. Don't worry about if you kill him with the front edge of that pattern. And what people don't understand, too, is the elongation of a pattern. The further out it gets, not only is it wide, but it's longer. And what happens is the bird's flying by, and if he flies into the front of the pattern, then he's being hit by all the stuff that's coming behind him. If he flies into the rear of the pattern, you're still hitting him. But it's, use your pattern, use your 30-inch circle, and just put it out there in front and pull the trigger. Don't try to make the shot perfect. That's what happens when you and I were talking about, see him coming at 100 yards and you get that gun up and you're trying to make it just perfect right there. And all you do is just slow down that little bitty bit when you get ready to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I just happened to think of that. Just don't try to make it perfect. Just get out in front and pull the trigger. It'll surprise you how well you can do.
Clay, you're bouncing like you just.
Tony nailed it. And I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. What he talked about, the shot pattern, the tail pattern. If you shoot a bird and you hit it and you just see it barely whirl down, or it flutters, and then you shoot one and you just absolutely dust it, more than likely you caught it with the front of the pattern and you caught all them other pellets. Other times you caught it with the edge of your pattern, tail of your pattern, you just got one pellet in it. As far as shooting, this is my rule of thumb. If I'm shooting and I'm not hitting anything, it's real hard for me to understand that I'm not leading enough. So I'll double my lead. You know, 9 times out of 10, if you're missing, you're shooting behind it. That's just what it is. So if you just keep shooting behind it, you think, well, maybe that's too far, just double it. Like you said, you got a 30-inch circle. So if you're doubling it, if you're missing it on the back end, you're moving your pattern, you're catching it on the front end.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So look, while we're here, Lanny, let's talk about, like, if a guy doesn't have a dog with him.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you know, you kind of got to learn this the hard way, and then sometimes you have to re-remember it every year. But if
recovery.
Because I'm going to look at you, because you're, yes. You will put more than one bird down on the ground at a time. I've seen you,
Yes.
But the best thing to do, Tony, I'm looking at you, if you knock a bird down, put your eyes right there.
Right on him and walk straight to him as fast as you can get there. You can load your gun going to him. If you can see the bird sitting up on a level field or whatever, fine. But if it's a dirt clod field, you better go straight to him. Don't take your eyes off of where he landed, and pick him up, put him in your back, and then hunt back to your stand.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, you will spend more time and miss more shots looking for birds than you would if you knock 3 or 4 down or 2 down, and then you're.
And I'm going to tell you what, on that note, around here, fire ants are bad. You need to pick them up so as fast. Quick as you can.
Yeah. So, Lanny, you'll turn around, Lanny, be like, hey, did you see where that bird fell?
No, you know. I'm picking.
It stands right there with you.
I'm picking your birds up, usually, is what's going on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Clay, I'm looking at you. You got a big smile. I got a question I want to ask you. Have you ever shot over the limit on doves?
I have. I just got to be honest. I have. Not intentionally.
It happens sometimes.
I have shot over the limit. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be right there at that 13 mark, and I got a group coming in. Just say I'm at 14. I got a group coming in. Okay, I only need one more. Just instinct tells me, just boom. So if a group's coming in, I always try to shoot the first bird because I don't know what my lead is. So if I got several birds come in, I'll shoot my first bird instead of the tail bird. That way, if I miss, I know to move my leads more. Or on the second time, if I'm aiming at my first bird and I'm hit my last bird, I know I'm not leading enough. But in times, I have done that and pulled the first bird and hit the back two at one time or something like that.
It does happen.
It does. You miscount. Or you got 15 in your bag and you've lost a bird and you're walking out of the field and, oops, there he is.
Yeah, your dog show up with one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had ammo, my Boykin. When I missed not having a dog, my wife won't let me have another dog. Anyway, but you know, one time the birds weren't flying good. I think I killed five. I went home with 18. I didn't kill them. Yeah. My dog found them though.
Yeah,
so, there were other people missing birds.
So guys, if you're on a field and the game warden show up, just unload your gun
immediately.
And, you know, show them that it's unloaded. As they start approaching, you just be prepared. Take a moment. Show them your gun's unloaded. Get your license ready, and just be polite. They're not there to harass you. They're just checking. And
I'm gonna say one thing about that, about a license. Okay, I'm 77 now. I don't need a license, but if you're over 65, you don't need a license in the state of Mississippi. But if you don't buy a license, the state cannot count you as a hunter towards their federal monies that they get for the number of people in hunting. Mississippi has a lifetime senior license, one-time fee, $5.
I can afford that.
I tell every older person that I see, get that license. Because now the state, you don't have to buy it again, but every year, with that, now that you have purchased that lifetime license, the state can count you towards their allotment of money coming from the federal government. They have a lifetime saltwater license too. So,
yeah, that's good advice, Tony. That really is. So we care about our wildlife agencies, and that's one way to support them. Because I think they get matching funds for every dollar that they get on a license. They get a match. They get matching funds. So what other questions have we need to ask, Matt? Can you think of anything?
This will be my first year taking Wilkes, and I mean, y'all have all taken children, and so I mean, any advice I'd greatly appreciate.
Tetra hearing protection.
Hearing protection. If you don't know, under these microphone ears I got on here are some hearing aids. I was, I'm not going to say I was 6 foot tall. I've never been. Okay, I was 5'8 and bulletproof. Okay. And, but now I love to turkey hunt. If I don't take somebody with me that can hear, I'm not going to kill a turkey as often as I could. He better be in the tree I'm sitting under.
Let him take a BB gun too.
Oh yeah, first time for sure, and learn to swing,
and make sure he's, you know, don't cock it till he's ready. But he can eliminate that bird right running away from me out there. But then they're having fun, you know. But again, safety. I'm gonna say one other thing. I don't think I brought it up earlier, but there was always a hard and fast rule with me. Is I will never shoot at a bird below the tree line. If there's a tree line around now, take it with a grain of salt. But I mean, if you're standing up against a tree line, obviously that's, I'm not talking about that. But if you're in a field and the tree line's out there, do not let your gun go below that tree line. Everyone that's ever dove hunting in life has been peppered with dove shot. Peppering isn't going to hurt you. Wear some type of glasses. Protective glasses. One little pellet can hit you in the eye and put that eye out, even if it's just, if it's a falling pellet. But if you get shot, and I have been shot before at, you know, 75 yards, pretty close, I mean, aiming right at you, it'll get to you. So make sure you, as a shooter, eye protection, not only for children, hearing protection for you also. And again, I use that, and you can look at a tree line and see, okay, if I'm shooting there, my shot's raining down on somebody. Sure. And that happens in a duffy all the time.
Yeah, and it's better to not shoot at a bird than shoot at a questionable bird. And that just makes everybody around you more comfortable. And then the spirit of the hunt is, you know, I'm hollering at Tony when you've got a bird that you can't see and you're helping me. But if all of a sudden you start shooting at low birds and make me uncomfortable, it just changes the whole dynamic of being around somebody.
Oh, absolutely. And that's probably one of the things about morning hunting I'm not happy with. Because those birds, if you're right out there at daylight, they're coming in low.
Mm-hmm.
And they're landing in that field. And I've had people shoot at them in the field.
Well, I was going to say that about spinning wings. My experience with them is it does attract them, but it puts them low all of a sudden. And so I'm not sure.
Yeah, if they're coming in to land at your wings, that's a different story. I'm just trying to get them to get close to me. Come on by.
Yeah. Boy, we love these doves so much. Landon, what's your favorite recipe?
I like them on the bone, on the grill, you know, just the old school way with a little piece of bacon around them. You just can't beat it to me. I do not like cutting them off the bone. I like leaving them 100% on the breastbone.
Yeah. Clay, what about you?
Same.
Yeah.
I tried them every way. You just can't beat it.
I was young, we never breasted birds. They were always picked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking 50s, okay? in mid 50s, because I was 50 in 55, I was 10 years old. I was hunting birds when I was 10. Single shot 410.
Picked them all.
Pick every one of them.
Yes.
A lot of times you'd sit there in the field while you're waiting, picking them. But my mother would pan fry, put them in a thing, make a gravy. They'd finish cooking and birds and gravy over rice.
My mom did the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, man, I still have that.
Y'all make me hungry.
I still have that recipe, but I take a breast bird, slice down either side of the breast. Don't take the meat off. Just open it up. Put me some chopped up jalapenos in there,
mm-hmm.
little cavenders on both sides, and then wrap that in bacon.
And don't overcook them.
Don't overcook them. Absolutely not. But you will like that.
Mm, that does sound good. Mike, why don't you ask him, or why don't we move to the trivia question? We can keep this thing going.
All right, Mr. Tony. So you're playing for David Kent, and the prize is a cell helmet Gamekeeper Edition cell phone cover.
Yeah, for David Kent has a chance to win this if you get this right now.
Well, this is going to be good.
All right, so the good news is it's multiple choice. So the mourning dove's flight is swift and darting, while its wings make a whistling sound. The mourning dove has been timed at a flight speed of 40 to 65 miles an hour, 30 to 55 miles an hour, or 45 to 70 miles an hour.
I'm going to go with the one that said 60 miles an hour in there. Only it depends on the wind. I mean, I thought they were going faster than that, but what is it, 30 to 60?
We're showing 30 to 55, but that was right.
You're pretty close, Tony. And I didn't realize you were 77, so we're going to give you a little kind of play here.
Thank you.
That's pretty fast.
Yes. Clay and I talking, at 50 yards, he's going 45, 50 miles an hour. You've got to get out there in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, at 1,200 feet a second, 1,250, some 1,330, you got to make sure you get the lead. Now, it's hard for me to do. Like I said, it's hard. And one of the things I have trouble with, Canada geese. I'll go to my grave not understanding why I cannot consistently hit a thing the size of a B-52. I've been told by all the pros, you don't ever aim at the body. You aim at the head. You lead the head. You always do. But I was at a hunting thing on the Eastern Shore of Maryland one time, and a flight V came out of what they would call the sanctuary, and I led the first goose, and I killed the fourth one back. I said, one thing, a goose is flying a lot because he's so big. He's flying a lot faster than you think he's flying. He looks like he's just barely loping, and all of a sudden, he's by you. Again, let me make that one other thing about the shooting. Don't wait till a bird gets on top of you to pull the trigger. I'm telling you, that's the hardest thing. One, you tend to flare the bird more when he's right there and you got moving. He starts doing his dipsy doodle thing. Take him out there in front of you. Because like I said, when he gets right on you, his speed will just increase exponentially to you. It feels like that because he's by. Take him further out in front of you.
Oh, that makes sense. The angles are better.
Well, here's a point maybe to hit on what Dudley said, too. He's talking about he starts off strong. Sometimes he'll hit a slump or whatever. Sometimes you get tired, you just don't realize it. But here's another thing. I ain't no two birds the same. And I'm bad about this. I might have them coming in hot and heavy, and I'm on it. Like, I'm just hitting every one of them. Boom, boom, boom. They're fast. I'm reacting. Then I'll have that one that comes in, and he might as well be sitting still, and I'll miss them all three times. Like, I'm so used to that speed. When they slow down, it takes me a minute to adjust.
Well, they're a lot of fun, and that's why we enjoy them, because they're so much fun. And well, guys, Lanny, you got anything? You always act like you don't get to ask enough questions. Have you?
No, I feel pretty good.
Make sure
today.
We exhaust your repertoire of questions.
I feel pretty good today. I hate the kind of picture you were trying to paint of me, but you know.
But it's just the truth.
Well, I think this is a Freudian slip, because it sounds like the way you were acting on the field, but nonetheless.
Lanny, does he really like you?
Freudian. I hope so.
Well, so is there anything else we need to cover? Tony, is there anything we should have asked you that you thought walking in here? Well, surely they'll ask me this.
I can't think of anything. Gun position, practice, if you can, go out in the back pasture and get you some clay targets and practice shooting them. Don't just throw them straight away from you. Get somebody, being safe again, get somebody off to the side, throw you some crossing patterns. If you can get out to a gun club, shoot you some skeet targets or trap targets. Skeet's a little better for dove because you got different angles, a better angle, or five stand. But get out there, and it's kind of close to the season right now, but get out there and shoot some targets. Just get your eye, looking at moving things. Yeah. Again, you're always looking at your target now that you get the gun.
And guys, y'all be safe. And one of the things, Tony, you've pointed out, sometimes you'll see guys sitting on a dove bucket with their shotgun pointed at the guy down in this right now.
Yep.
You don't need to do that. You need to hold that gun where the barrel's pointed up and take all this into consideration.
And safety first.
You got to be safe.
Especially what Tony was saying about the horizon and the shot and everything. I can speak. I'm probably one of our first podcasts was me shooting my uncle on a dove field. So it happens. And you got to be careful about it. It was a life lesson learned. So
here's one
maybe,
other thing.
Maybe dig back in the vault. Shout out to you, Uncle Steve. glad you're still doing well.
Keeping that gun pointed in a safe direction. Yeah. I always keep the butt on the ground and a barrel pointed up. It's kind of like that guy looking at you through his scope on the deer stand. You're walking out and here's a guy, you see him over in his stand looking at you, looking through his rifle scope looking at you. Have you never had that happen?
Well, not that I know of.
Oh, man.
I'm sure.
You probably didn't. But yeah.
Here's another pet peeve of mine that we did not mention. First of all, when I go dove hunting, if I have my friends or whatever, we have a meeting ahead of time, talk about safety, what we're going to do, when we're going to quit. Because the birds still need to feed. You don't need to shoot them all day. You need to have a stopping point so they come in there and feed. Second of all, I see so many people that will wound a bird. Instead of going out there and chasing it down, they'll shoot it on the ground. Like, well, you don't do that. You never know what's across you, where that shot's going. Don't finish it off on the ground.
Yep.
Yeah,
Bobby. I agree.
Bobby.
I don't know how I got thrown into that.
That's
good advice.
A lot of buses driving around here.
I'm returning the bus drive.
But a really good point you made, though, is about having a stopping time instead of letting those birds feed.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody's not going to get the limit, Sometimes you look at a field, birds are flying good here, not there. But, say 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock, when I used to hunt out at a dove club out here, when that horn beeped, you better not fire another round, not one, or you would never be back on that hunt again. Let them come into the field and don't wait till it's dark. Get out of there early. If you're there, 2 o'clock, usually people start getting in the field, maybe sometimes later 3 and even 4, but get out of there. Yeah. Let them feed.
Makes sense. Tony, we appreciate you. Look, you've been a great ambassador for shotgun sports for a long time. You shot and won the Pan American Olympic Games somewhere in wherever Pan America is.
I was in the Olympics, and I did win some medals in the Pan Am Games, which is the Western Hemisphere's Olympics. It was a training ground for the real thing. That's what it was started for.
Well, you're an unbelievable shotgun.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And I'm not the best I've ever seen. The best dove shooter I ever was ever in a field with is a guy named John Brown III from Birmingham, Alabama. I don't know that I ever saw him miss a bird.
Wow.
And I hunted with him several times. Absolutely the best, and had a yellow lab that picked up everything.
Yeah.
It didn't take him long to get a limit.
Yeah, I guess not. So, well, that sounds good. Guys, it's been fun. Lanny, you got anything else?
No. He made me think about dogs, so now I'm starting to think about that. So
it's getting to be about that time. Mm-hmm. Mac, have fun with Wilkes.
Yeah.
Hearing protection. Yeah. Keep him safe.
That might have fun.
Hey, eyes too, guys. Don't forget the eyes.
Don't let the fire ants get on him.
Plenty keep of cold drinks.
Bug repellent.
Bug spray. Mm-hmm. There you go, Clay. If you got chigger specific stuff, I recommend that.
Bring some water for your dogs.
Yes. Yeah, Keep it cool. Keep it cool.
Yep.
If you have one, I can't pour. I had him cremated. He's still rides in the truck with me. Uh-huh. I can't pour that water on him anymore.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry about that, Tom.
All right, guys. Well, so Dudley's here. I forgot, Dudley. Are you still there, Dudley?
I'm still here.
Good. Did anything else you want to ask or add?
No, I think we've been here a while. So everybody pick a good spot and have a good time.
What's the rest of your day look like, Dudley?
Well, I got to go through all these emails and what trees to plant, all that good stuff.
Good. I like to hear that.
Yeah, that is good. So, well, Tony, thank you so much for
being
here.
You're very welcome. And, enjoyed it.
We're all big Rosetti fans.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, guys,
go see McGarry's.
Tony could actually help you fit a gun.
Yeah.
So, you work in the West Point, Mississippi Gary's store.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And sometimes you're in Columbus, right?
Sometimes.
Yep. So, guys, you could come to West Point and meet Tony and let him help you get a shotgun fitted to
there
fit
you. Sweet.
Yeah. That Browning looks good in your hands. You point it well.
Yes. It does. You don't have the serial number of this written down anywhere, do you?
Yeah, we do. So we need to get that back before you leave. So. All right, guys. Well, Mike, you got anything else to add?
We are having a biologic warehouse sale.
Come on by. Yeah, when you go see Tony, just pull across. He's literally across the street from us. Pulling in here.
Got super deep discounts, extremely fresh seed. The Green Patch, we're offering 1 acre for $49.99.
What?
Yep.
Did Toxie approve that?
Not yet.
Okay.
And it was bagged 2 months ago. So, I mean, it's as fresh as you can get. And then if you don't shoot very good on your Labor Day dove hunt, you can go to Gamekeeper Meats. We've got fresh inventory on there.
Oh, yeah. Sure do. Ooh. Yeah.
Fresh meat.
I'm along with that.
All right. So the warehouse sale is exciting. Yeah, we can meet a lot of people. Our listeners of our podcast drop by here and
get you a shotgun at Gary's, pick your food plot seat up, shoot.
Get some wing shooting advice from us while you're here.
Yeah, from Clay. I wouldn't take any from Bobby.
All right, guys. Well, that sounds fun. Rob, thank you for what you've done, rewiring the whole studio this morning. That was incredible. Yep. So why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Rob.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.